Zach Meschan, Chief Justice Perry, presiding.
Good morning. Go ahead and be seated. All right, our last matter on calendar today is docket number 51631, Karstafian versus Milsner. Counsel, are you ready to proceed?
Yes, Your Honor.
All right. Do you want to reserve any time?
I'll reserve 5 minutes, Your Honor, but I have a feeling I won't use all 15 anyway.
Okay, very good.
Okay. Good morning, Justices. I'm Scott Russo, together with my partner, Pat King, counsel for John Karstafian, the plaintiff in this case. Mr. Karstafian spent hundreds of thousands of dollars litigating this case for 4.5 years. There were 4 trial dates set, all at his counsel's request. They were vacated for various issues, all having to do with the defendant's amending of pleadings. Exception of the last one, which was vacated in order to accommodate mediation. This case was diligently prosecuted. Hundreds of thousands of papers were reviewed. Depositions were taken. Experts got going. Everything that would normally occur to get a trial started occurred. A mistake occurred. That mistake was the setting of the trial 2 months after the 5-year cutoff. That mistake was brought to the attention of the trial judge 5 months before the discovery, before that 5 years would run. 98 days before that 5-year statute would run, Mr. Karstafian filed a motion to expedite the trial for trial preference setting. Why? He pointed out that the defense would be filing a motion to dismiss as soon as the 5 years ran. You will not find a case where the plaintiff was more diligent and brought the issue to the court's attention timely than this case.
Now, counsel, did you ask opposing counsel to stipulate to extend the 5 years to cover that 2 additional months till the trial was set to start?
Before the motion was filed in October, on October 2, 2007, to ask the court its understanding of whether or not there was a waiver or a tolling because of the prior order of the stay of the matter, Mr. Hill was in fact asked to stipulate that there had been a tolling of the 5-year rules before that motion was filed. That request was denied.
By the judge?
No. The request was made of defense counsel. Will you stipulate that when we set this trial there was a waiver of the 5-year rule, and that request was denied, which is why counsel, my predecessor counsel, filed the motion to ask the court whether or not there had been an implied waiver or a tolling. We know implied waiver was not an option in hindsight.
Now, any time was Judge Adams asked to, because there was no stipulation, to start the trial, swear in a witness, take some testimony, and then adjourn the trial for completion to later on? Because I believe it was a bench trial, wasn't it?
It was going to be a jury trial, Your Honor.
Okay, well, swear in a jury and do the same procedure.
I absolutely asked that in my motion for trial preference, filed on November 26, 2007. I told the judge, we've got a problem. They've already told us they're going to move to dismiss. They have said it in their papers. When that 5 years runs, they're going to move to dismiss. Swear in a witness. We said it. It's in our papers. We telegraphed this exact scenario. It was right there. So we told the judge, this is going to be a problem. The motion to dismiss is coming. And he denied our request for preferential trial setting with still 98 days to go. Without explanation, without evaluating whether or not we had been diligent, without making any reference to whether or not the court could accommodate us, whether or not we could swear in a witness. This case is unprecedented in that the facts are so clear on the diligence and the time remaining.
What was indicated in the opposition to the motion for the preferential setting?
Mr. Hill's opposition was, the court should not provide us Herculean efforts to set this case for trial. I am busy. I have other cases between now and 3.5 months from now.
Were they 5-year cases?
Excuse me?
Were there cases that involved the 5-year rule?
I don't know. He did not say.
I'll ask him.
This exact issue of defense counsel saying, but I'm busy with other cases, I'm a small office, came up in the Biondi versus Brom case, a California Court of Appeal case. In that case, the trial court denied the motion for preference, saying that the plaintiff had not been exceptionally diligent, acknowledging the defense counsel's argument that I'm busy, and that the Court of Appeal reversed. And the Court of Appeal found, in fact, there had been diligence, and you have to put things aside for when you have a five-year case. The defense counsel's calendar is not the issue. The question is plaintiff's diligence, and we were diligent in this case. Now, unlike Nevada, which does not have an express statutory statement of public policy having to do with the five-year rule, California has the analogous statute, CCP 583, and in fact, there's actually a statement of public policy in California going with the five-year statute, saying it's the policy of the state that plaintiffs shall proceed with reasonable diligence in the prosecution of an action, but that all parties shall cooperate in bringing the action to trial or other disposition. And then it goes on to state that we favor trial on the merits over these procedural dismissals. Now, this court, without ever actually going that far to say this is the public policy, did state in the Boren case, which we'll talk about more having to do with what did the tolling, or did the stay of the case toll the five-year running, you state, for a court to prohibit the parties from going to trial and then to dismiss their action for failure to bring it to trial is so obviously unfair and unjust as to be unarguable. I'd submit to this court that it is the public policy of this state that you want a trial on the merits as opposed to a procedural dismissal when we have this diligence. Now, you've asked us to really be prepared for two issues. One, the issue is what is the standard when a trial judge is presented with a motion for trial preference? And then the second issue was, was the five-year statute told by the stay of the case as to all pleadings and all discovery? The issue of the standard of review the discretion of the trial court in granting the motion for preference has never been decided by this court. However, it's been decided 30, 50 times in your sister state, California, by the Supreme Court over and over, and the standard is abuse of discretion. The Supreme Court of California in the Weeks case, which we cited to you, they tried to not establish an absolute timeline, meaning how long before trial does the court have to grant this preference motion. But in that case, they used 28 days as a test. We know that's not an absolute test, but in that case, they said 28 days was enough if the plaintiff was diligent to get the case on. Every other case that's been decided in California addresses it in one way. Was the plaintiff diligent? And I'd submit to you, and the reason why we went through the record and in our opening brief, pointed out to you the diligence of the plaintiff in this case for that exact issue, so you could find, which the trial court did not even address in this case, that based on the record, the plaintiff was diligent, and so therefore it was an abuse of discretion by Judge Adams to not set this case to a date before March 3, 2008, to at least swear in a witness, to get it started. There was plenty of time, and the excuse of defense counsel is busy, I've got other cases, it was not a controlling factor. The question was diligence, and we've proved that. Now, the second issue that you asked us to address is this tolling issue of the five-year statute. In the same Boren case, this court established that in certain circumstances, we will toll the five-year statute. The policy, in essence, is that the statute's pretty absolute. We don't look at equities. However, you've established that there are exceptions to the five-year rule when there has been a stay of the case. In that case, the Boren case, there was a stay of litigation by the trial court. And this court said you cannot dismiss the case. We're going to carve out that time. You've expanded the issue of tolling in the Allen versus McDonald case, in the Ricard versus Montgomery Ward case. You've established that there are circumstances where if there's a stay of the case, it could be a bankruptcy stay, it could be an express stay by the judge, we're going to add that time. And based on the stay, which occurred in this case on August 13, 2007, of all motion proceedings, all decisions, and all discovery, subject to a prior stipulation by the parties or an order of the court, and the fact that that was never lifted, was never even addressed for another 3 months, that stay can be used by you to get to the public policy of this state, which is trial on the merits versus procedural.
That stay was silent as to the five-year rule.
Yeah, this stay in the Bourne case was silent on the five-year
rule. The stay that you just referred to as to this case.
This stay was silent on the five-year rule. The stay issued by the judge in August of 2007 was all motions, all decisions, and all discovery. What is there left?
The five-year rule. That's why we're here.
And I'd submit to Your Honor, when we've been told that we can't do anything on the case until further order of the court, to get to the right decision in this case, justice, you can add that 3 to 4 months on, and we're fine. What we're asking for in this case, ultimately, is we go back to when we moved to get trial preference. There was 98 days left before that five-year statute ran. As has been done in the California cases, when this exact same scenario comes up, what we'd ask on remand is that you remand this to the trial court and with an instruction that you're going to get this case tried within 98 days, and we will be ready. Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Richard Hill. I represent Richard Milsner in this case, and I represent Richard Milsner in the other two cases that these gentlemen have filed against him pertaining to basically the same facts in this case. This case was dismissed on the five-year rule for failure to bring it to trial, and that dismissal was mandatory. That dismissal was jurisdictional. What the plaintiff wants here is to be relieved from a trifecta of mistakes and negligence. The plaintiff was negligent in setting the case in the first place. The plaintiff was negligent in how he dealt with his response, and how he was finally negligent in accepting what he knew was a bad decision and running a risk to see what would happen. Now, there are two concepts that I believe control this case. The first one is stare decisis. This court has a long, long history of ruling that there are no excuses for not complying with the five-year rule. The second concept that is at issue here is invited error. That is precisely why Judge Adams did not advance the trial date, because the plaintiff on December 10th at JA 859 in your record told the court, if the five-year motion is not regranted, this motion, the trial preference motion, must be granted so that Karstarfin is not subject to the five-year rule. Based on the foregoing, they then ask for this motion, for the trial preference motion in the alternative. They knew that first motion that Mr. Gunderson filed was no good. That's why they filed the second motion. That's why they did the research. They found that the proper remedy was to impanel the jury, call one witness, and adjourn for whatever reason. The mechanics of that are a bit murky.
You're saying they didn't ask the Judge Adams to do that?
I'm sorry, sir.
They didn't ask Judge Adams to, as an alternative, to impanel a jury, call a witness, take some brief testimony, and adjourn the trial?
The day they filed the motion to advance the trial date, which is, I think, the question you've asked, the day they did that, they also asked him to grant the motion that he ended up granting, which was that there had been an implied waiver of the five-year rule by signing a setting form.
But there was no request to impanel a jury and
so there was. And they made two motions, sir.
Okay.
In the alternative, the first motion they made was that there was an implied waiver of the five-year rule based on a setting form.
Okay.
Okay. The second motion that they made was precisely what you're talking about, the correct answer. They never withdrew the incorrect motion, and then when the judge granted what they knew to be the incorrect motion, they stood back and watched. And we continued to for trial because we didn't know what the judge was going to do. At that point, and this is very telling, in January of 2008, after Judge Adams denies the trial preference motion and grants the other motion, they go back into federal court, which the federal case was pending at that time, and they state the same claims that are pending in this case, that Mr. Milsner looted the company. Now, that tells me that they knew that the order that the judge had given was wrong, and they were hedging their bet. That they, in fact, they waited until after the five-year rule had run, and after we'd filed our motion to dismiss, before they even served Milsner in the state court case, or in the federal case, rather.
Counsel, let's go back in time, sir. And let's deal a little bit with our state court cases before us. Understanding there was a motion for this expedited trial setting because of the five-year rule. You opposed it, my understanding, is what was recounted.
Yes, sir.
Because you were, quote, busy. That's their words. How did you respond in terms of your opposition to that request?
Several things, sir. First of all, to address the I'm busy issue. Yes, I had a trial, two trials in February, and by the time that that motion landed on Judge Adams' desk, by the time it was submission was requested, I had a three-week priority-setting jury trial in a case where Richard Horton, a former a late member of the bar, was a party to the case. He was dying, and Judge Adams wanted to try to get the case to trial before Mr. Horton passed away. He gave us, he strapped us to the rails, and we had to get ready. How else did I respond?
As to the other two cases, were they five-year rule cases, or did they have similar situations as the Horton case?
No, sir, they did not. But the bigger problem with the case was that the Karstarfin case was not ready for trial in January.
You previously said you had been preparing and you were ready to go to trial because you were preparing in the alternative if the motion...
Yes, sir.
Those were your words.
Yes, sir. That was in January. That was in the January time frame when we completed the deposition of Mr. and Mrs. Karstarfin. And, in fact, it's not in your record, but their expert report was not delivered to me until April 18th. They weren't even ready to go to trial in March. Their expert report hadn't even been prepared. And if you'll look, for some reason, my exhibits to that motion didn't make it into the joint appendix. I don't know why. So I had to file a separate appendix. But in here, I set forth, and if I have just a second, several letters to Mr. King saying, come on, let's get ready. Let's get discovery going here. And as of January, I didn't get their expert report until April 18th, sir. So that case was not ready for trial. And more importantly, I have to believe that Judge Adams looks down the road, looks at his calendar, and says, well, these guys want a preferential trial setting, and they're looking at the five-year rule. But they've told me that they can live with this order over here, and I don't have to disrupt any other courts. I don't have to disrupt my court. They can go get ready for trial. They told me that's a good order. I'll give them that. They asked for what they got. And now that they got it, now I do not understand how a lawyer can go to a judge and say, would you please give me this relief? And then when it's granted, turn around and say, that was wrong. You shouldn't have done that to me. You should have been smarter than me. You should have denied the motion I made. I find that to be an intolerable position. This court asked...
Well, was it a factor, Mr. Hill, in the judge's decision to deny the trial setting preference request that the judge, perhaps incorrectly under Prostek, concluded that the signing of the setting form satisfied a waiver of the five-year rule?
That's what he ruled.
Yeah.
That's what he ruled.
So if that... fact was legally incorrect, does that affect this court's assessment of an abuse of discretion denying the trial setting motion?
I believe that Mr. Russo is incorrect when he tells this court that this court has never addressed the issue of what standard applies. I believe that this court has addressed it, and that is in the case of Monroe Limited versus Central Telephone Company. It's a 1975 case, 91 Nevada, at page 456. In that case, this court unanimously said, setting trial dates and other matters done in the arrangement of a trial court's calendar is within the discretion of that court, and in the absence of arbitrary conduct, will not be interfered with by this court. The standard is arbitrary conduct. I come back and I say, the plaintiff created his problem. The plaintiff then comes back and creates a problem for himself again when he asks for the wrong relief. Now, that is invited error. He got what he asked for, and it was wrong. Under Rule 11, counsel represent to the court when they sign a paper or a pleading that it has legal merit. Turns out they were wrong. Now, the law is about rewarding people who process their cases promptly and efficiently and penalizing those who don't. That's what happened.
Did you raise any issue with respect to the fallacious assumption that this implied waiver argument would be good? More precisely, did you say to your opponent or to Judge Adams, under Prostack versus Loudon, implied waiver will not cure the problem plaintiffs are in?
That did not come up. I was unaware of Prostack until after Judge Adams made his ruling.
So everyone assumed that this implied waiver argument indeed might solve the problem.
I will tell you that I found Prostack within a day or two after Judge Adams's order and sat back, continuing to prepare for trial. Make no mistake about that. We had to have our expert complete his report, etc. But the real question here, I think you're getting at, is did I sandbag them? No.
I don't want to be rude like that.
Let's call it what it is. The answer is no. Because what happened was, when they made that original motion, I miscalendered my response and I filed it a day or two late. It was filed the same day. In fact, last night I looked. Judge Adams issued his order granting it on October 19th at noon. My opposition was filed at 2:20 in the afternoon. Now, if I was trying to sandbag these guys and I knew about Prostack, I'm not going to come running in and say, wait a minute, would you please reconsider your order? Please reconsider your order, which is what I did. Judge Adams says, Hill made a calendaring error. Okay, I'll look at your opposition. You folks have 5 days to come back with a new reply. And they did. And at the same time, they came in with the trial preference motion, which then all got decided by Judge Adams on December 14th.
Now, what do you do with their stay argument that the stipulation effectively stayed any further motion practice or discovery, and inherent in that is a stay of the trial, and therefore under Boren and its progeny, Boren, there should be a tolling?
Yes, ma'am. Under Boren, the question is, the focus is, did what the district court do prevent them from bringing the case to trial? The trial setting date was obtained in August of 07, when that stay of discovery, and Judge Adams, you don't need to decide the two or three pending motions that are there, and why take somebody's deposition before a settlement conference? The parties are better off to go to a settlement conference with the cloud hanging over them. Gives them motivation. Judge Adams specifically ruled and specifically found that it was not in the causative chain, did not cause any inability on their part to bring the case to trial. That bullet got shot right up front. That case was set for trial in May, and that was done in August. I'm down
if you credit their stay argument, what limits would be on the five-year rule? A judge could simply impose a stay at any time, correct?
I'm sorry, I don't understand.
What limits would be on their stay argument?
That if there were a stay, the stay against bringing the case to trial lasted about 3 minutes. When we left Judge Adams' chambers, went out to his secretary's desk, and we all agreed on the May 2008 trial setting. Bang! They were not prevented. I mean, 2 minutes, 3 minutes. That's how long they were prevented from bringing that case to selecting the trial date. It was the selection of that date that was the error, and it was not affected by any stay or anything Judge Adams did.
Because they could have as easily set it within the five-year rule.
Yeah. If counsel had been paying attention to what he was doing, he could have. Now, I wanted to take just a moment and address one of the issues that the court raised, which is what to do about Rule 41E. For the 30 years I've been a sole practitioner, Rule 41E has been the, call it the 800-pound gorilla. You know where it is, you know what it looks like, you know how you have to deal with it. It's simple, and it's fatal. This first case that you had in here this morning, I sat and I listened to, Rule 4I, you've now got all these factors that have to get weighed, and what about this factor and that factor? There are no factors of Rule 41E. You get uniform enforcement throughout the state. Very simple. Whereas if one judge says, well, gosh, you know, that's not fair, then you get a different you start getting different results. This court in case maybe the last 2 weeks or so, in the indemnification case, I believe it was Justice Pickering's opinion, talked about how important it is to have guidance and predictability in the law. And if you go and start changing Rule 41E as apparently your staff thinks you should, that's going to be the end of that predictability. We, as practitioners, need more predictability. We need fewer landmines out there. Have I answered every question? Is there any more?
Any other questions? No, I think that's it. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
The issue of invited error was addressed at length by us in our reply brief. The elements are not met in this case. We're not asking for the change of a ruling where we misled the court, anything of the nature. We've laid out the authority. It does not apply to this case. I did ask Judge Adams to impanel a jury. It's in that motion for trial preference. I asked him to do it before the March 3rd date. We were all under a misunderstanding having to do with what the applicable law was with respect to waiver, but the motion brought to Judge Adams about the fact that the trial had been set after the five-year cutoff, 2 months after, was really a two-pronged motion. When the trial was set at that point in time, there had been a stay of discovery and all motion pleadings, all motion practice. We asked Judge Adams, did that result in a stay under the five-year rule? That was part of what we requested of him. We did not just ask for, was there a waiver? We posed the question. And Judge Adams said, yes, I find twice that the five-year rule is stayed or waived until May 12, 2007. We did not have a remedy. That's not an appealable issue for us. I suppose we could have taken a writ on the granting of that, but that's not that. We were stuck with that. I told Judge Adams in my motion for preference that I thought there was a problem. I told him that their papers were persuasive in opposing that motion, that there had been either tolling or a waiver. I said this issue was coming up. I wasn't privy to ProStack. When I saw it on March 5, 2008, right after the 5 years ran, I thought, oh my gosh, a mistake was made. Intuitively, I saw that one coming. That's why in the papers to advance the trial, I said, their papers seem persuasive, Judge, this is coming. Okay, we didn't know about it. ProStack came up later. On the issue of expert reports and that the case was not ready, poppycock. The case was ready for trial to go, would have been in October of 2007, the original trial date. The expert prepared a report for that trial date. Didn't take his deposition. He amended his report and produced a new one in April of 2008 in anticipation of the May 12th trial date. We were diligent. We didn't slow down one bit in the sense that the case was ready, would have been ready for October of 2007. And then due to just what happened with the scheduling, we got it ready for May. The reason why the new reports didn't get produced in that interim time period is we had a stay till, and everything was stayed until after the mediation was completed and there was going to be a further order from the court.
When did the stay expire?
Excuse me, Your Honor?
When did the stay expire?
The stay, by its express terms, the parties' counsel have agreed to stay any motions or any decision on pending motions, as well as formal discovery proceedings, until further stipulation of the parties or order of this court. I submit that there was the next order was the denial of their motion for summary judgment sometime months later. We did not go in and stipulate to a release of the stay. The judge did not specifically order that the stay was lifted. So it kind of went into this amorphous land, but it was there. We did not mislead Judge Adams one bit. We were up front. This issue is out there. What happens, Judge? And the judge prevented us from going to trial by saying, we're going this way. We're not going to advance it. We asked for the earlier trial date, and under the Boren case, we were denied our ability to proceed to trial within the 5 years.
But by the same token, you didn't advocate to Judge Adams that it was mandatory that he advance your trial date because the implied waiver argument was fatally flawed.
No, not as expressly as I wish in hindsight, but I did tell him in that motion, they filed this opposition, and it looks really good, Judge. We didn't have any authority on implied waiver. It was my predecessor counsel that filed the original papers, and I don't know what he was thinking. But I can tell you, I pointed out to Judge Adams in those papers that their argument looks pretty good that you couldn't have implied waiver, and I don't want to take a chance because guess what, Judge? On March 4th, the motion to dismiss is coming, and you're going to be dealing with this. So here we are. Thank you. Are there any questions?
Any other questions?
All right, counsel, thanks for the arguments. This matter will stand submitted, and we'll stand in recess until next.